Mark Haney here, getting ready for today's show. You're going to love it. And this whole show is brought to you by VeoSport. It is the headphone company, wireless Bluetooth, but affordable. It's a company I'm invested in. I invest in entrepreneurs. My partner, Garrett Marchesano, he is a rock star entrepreneur. And these headphones, these are what everybody ought to be wearing. And when they're getting pumped up, listening to the Mark Haney show, you need to be wearing your VeoSport, V-E-O Sport headphones. And they're going to make me sound great. And coming up today in the show, Devin Bell, Placer County Sheriff. He shares his story of leadership, courage, and really what happens in today's law enforcement world. Allison Joy will also join us. She's the editor-in-chief of Comstock Magazine, Sacramento's premier publication for business insight, and also John and Lori Wyckoff. These are entrepreneurs. They're the power couple of manufacturing, independence, precision machining. They're going to share their story of family business, building a business, surviving the crisis, and even figuring out a way to thrive and get back to the people that have sacrificed for our freedom. So thinking about leadership, this show is also looking back at, it was 10 years ago today that Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy, and then 18 years ago is when we had the crisis, the World Trade Center and 9/11. So thinking about me and where I view this opportunity, it really is about freedom. So stick around. I think you're going to like the show.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy and remain the key to fueling our nation's growth. Our very own Mark Haney is on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution in the hometown we love. He is the ultimate small business coach, sounding board, and storyteller. But to us, he's still good old Marky from down on the block. He is the entrepreneur next door. And this is the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. Entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, one story at a time, one entrepreneur at a time. And I'm here with my main man. How you doing today, Mark? Is you hanging or banging?
I am fired up to be here. Looking forward to hearing from our guest. I am banging. How about you? Are you hanging or banging today?
Well, you know what? I am very excited to be here. I think this is my best opportunity. We are sharing stories of winning, right? We are sharing stories of men and women who chase their dream, find a way to overcome. And in the end, in these stories, typically, there's a lot of heartache, but in these particular stories, right, there's a happily ever after kind of ending or continuation.
We have a pretty good job, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We're lucky to have. We're going to be talking about men and women that have sacrificed, men and women who have taken risk, and men and women that ultimately have overcome. And just thinking about this, Marcus, I always think of that song, Have You Forgotten, right? And so here we are. It wasn't that long ago for me. It doesn't feel like at my age, right? We're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
And so just as you think back to 9/11, I mean, I know it had a huge impact on you. You were what, 12 years old at the time?
Yeah, I remember you driving me to school and explaining to me exactly of the catastrophe that happened and what impact it's going to have for the rest of my life and things like that. And I remember really it taking me aback. And we sat in school. I was in eighth grade and watched it on TV all day unfold. Such a terrible thing.
Yeah, it's like, and I probably didn't have half the understanding, or even a tenth of the a percent of the understanding of how it would at that moment,
right?
How it would ultimately change our world. But one of the things, I'm one of those guys that says, let's focus on now. Let's focus on what we can control while keeping our mind on the prize, the future, right? So most of the time on the now, but some of the time on the far future, and really not looking in the rearview mirror all the time. But today, it's kind of like maybe there's a time where you look back and there's a lesson involved. So that's what I'm hoping can happen today a little bit, as we look back and remember a little bit. And I think my big takeaway from that time was leadership, right? So how people stepped up, how somehow the country came together, right? We saw people who have a lot of division in their world, but we all came together as a family. family and as a country at that time.
Yeah, definitely. Our community became stronger. I was young, so I didn't really see the impact of all of that like you did necessarily, but I just remember the patriotic time and everybody's waving their red, white, and blue around, and yeah, I think we need to get back to that.
Yeah, I mean, did you think that had an impact on you joining the Marines? Ultimately.
Absolutely, right? I mean, I've always been patriotic. I think that that day really signified as a placeholder in my life that, you know, this place that we live in, we're so blessed, right? Live this in this place where you can live the American dream. You can be an entrepreneur. You can go out and build your own whatever you want. And that doesn't happen all over the world. So absolutely, it had an impact.
Yeah, for sure. Just, you know, think back the leadership, the first responders, but everybody. And I think probably the person that, as I thought back about this, I thought, who do I remember being the big leader? And I remember a guy named Rudy Giuliani, right?
Okay,
He's a hometown patriotism guy as well, right? In the city of New York, and you know how he led, you know, his organization, how he led the city, and ultimately, you know, I think that emanated or resonated with a lot of us,
to the whole country, really,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
Absolutely.
But so what makes it? So, but what makes a good leader, right? So we look back and go, okay, why was Rudy so successful? Why are leaders so successful? And I think I always think about leadership as influence, right? So, but the most influential people have this cool combination of humility and yet the courage to step up when called upon. So, thinking about that, you know, I was thinking to myself, who are the top leaders in American history or in the world? And you know, some of the names that came up were crazy. I saw Adolf Hitler made the top five of like three lists, and I was like, wow. One of the people that I saw on the list, not in the top 10 or anything, was someone named Crazy Horse. You ever heard of that name?
I believe he was an Indian warfighter, right?
Indian warrior, yeah. You know, one of the most feared. And one of the interesting stories is there's a rumor that says he nursed as a baby from all the women in the tribe.
Oh, what a lucky guy.
But it made me think that they said that that gave him perspective of the entire tribe. And I think that's, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like, why, what makes us leaders have empathy and humility? And I always think to myself, it's none of us knows the entire picture, right? If you look at an opportunity to lead and to think that you know everything about everybody, to see the entire chessboard, nobody really sees everything.
Right.
So having the humility to listen to your teammates, listen to the other people that are being influenced, I mean, that's part of the humility side of leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you got to look at it as an opportunity, I think, like you mentioned, right? You have the opportunity to lead or the opportunity to follow. And like you like to say, get out of the way if you don't have anything to contribute, right?
Lead, follow, get out of the way. We're running a little late on time. We've got big show guests coming up. We have coming up in the show, okay, we have the patriotic power couple of entrepreneurship, Lori and John Wyckoff. We also have the rising star of the Sacramento media landscape, Allison Joy. But coming up after the break, Placer County's leader of law enforcement, Sheriff Devin Bell, is in the house. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, brought to you by Comstocks Magazine. I am the entrepreneur next door, and this is the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the place where our crazy dreams seem just a little less crazy. Mark Haney is our chief dreaming officer. He knows the right people, the right tactics, and the right philosophies to win. He is the entrepreneur next door, and this is the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Haney, and today I have the privilege of being joined by Devin Bell. He's our Placer County Sheriff. How you doing, Devin?
I am wonderful. Great to be here.
Thank you for being here, and especially on a show like today where we're thinking back, right? We have the financial crisis was 10 years ago this week. We have 9/11 about 18 years ago. And with you, you guys have had some crisis in the Placer County law enforcement as well.
We live in crisis, but yeah, over the years, we've certainly had some particularly dark spots that we've had to move through. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. Leadership, we talk about leadership in a time of crisis. Talk to us about what you face every day, and maybe you can even share a story or two about times when you've had to step up and lead.
Okay. We've had, first off, I gotta give a shout out to my folks. I have an amazing group of people that serve an amazing community. We're fortunate enough here where we live, when we roll through a community and we wave, people wave back with all their fingers, and we do appreciate that. We don't take that for granted.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen everywhere.
Yeah.
I can tell you, one of the most challenging times, I've had a couple. One right after I took office. I don't think I'll go into that one. But one I think that everybody's familiar with is Mike Davis, one of our deputy sheriffs. I might get emotional about this because I was pretty close with Mike. He lived in my neighborhood, as a matter of fact. And when Mike was killed, that was a tough, tough day for us. And I'll tell you what, I was standing. I was the undersheriff at the time, second in command. And my sheriff stood up there, and we had been pummeled with lots of questions, and including people that saying, why didn't you just kill that guy, the suspect?
The suspect.
You should have just killed him. And the sheriff very poignantly said, no, because we're not him. And in a time of crisis, and it's really easy to allow your emotions to take over, you got to stick true to your values. And our values, the core values of the organization, that was not in aligned. That was not aligned. So we acted appropriately and professionally, and we handled our business the way we were supposed to, and didn't compromise our values at a time of crisis.
Amazing. Well, thinking about that story, I think I was on my way out of town, heading I think to Paso Robles for a concert or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I remember going down I-80 at, it must have been late morning and mid-morning, and seeing the massive number of law enforcement heading toward the Reno area, heading right up toward Auburn, where you guys ended up with the second victim,
right?
And second law enforcement,
yes,
person that got shot,
right?
So thinking about how that it rocked our community,
yes.
So thinking about the leadership, but then beyond that, the next day, what was the? How does that change a department?
It was our darkest day, but it also was a springboard to a cultural shift that was part of our brightest sunrise. The initial days were absolutely horrible, but what it did, it also galvanizes people. It brings your team together. It brings the community together, and it makes the community realize, hey, what you do, you guys are prepared to sacrifice for us.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, rolling through the community as part of our procession, when we laid Mike to rest, they and I will get emotional. I'm sorry about that, but the community lined up with American flags, and they had our back. Mm-hmm. And that's not faded. They're still there for us,
yeah,
and we're still there for them. So through crisis, there can absolutely be something special. It was dark. Don't get me wrong. It was awful. But some wonderful things grew out of that.
Yeah.
And can.
Can grow out of it. Great information. I think, obviously, law enforcement around the country is facing maybe some it's getting some bad press.
Yep.
It's getting, there's challenges out there. But, when stuff hits the fan, it's like, who do you want by your side? I always think of that. And I think that's true in entrepreneurship. It's probably true in life, right? You want people by your side that that will stick by you. And thinking about culture, so Ed Bonner was the sheriff at that point. You took over shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I took over in 2017, February 2017. The sheriff had a couple of things going on personally, health-wise, and he needed to step away from the pressure. And we had worked so closely together, and again, philosophical alignment, continuity of not only mission but philosophy and values. And it was a fairly easy transition for me to with the support of my board, slide into that position.
So let's talk about your journey, and then mm-hmm. we'll get back into
sure.
leadership style, because how you might differ from a guy like Ed Bonner. Nobody is exactly the same. So
no.
Talk to us about your journey. How did you end up becoming sheriff? Where did you become from? Early philosophies and just like how you got here?
Well, I grew up in a little town just up the road, Loomis.
Yes.
Graduated from Delaware High School. Golden Eagles.
Yes, absolutely.
Football season is upon us.
Without a doubt.
I worked out of high school for the California State Park System. My grandfather was a retired state park ranger. So I had seen him model service my entire childhood. He retired, and I kind of followed into that and worked for the state park system. And then I got into construction. When I was in high school, I was really good in math, up into calculus, and I worked for a civil engineering firm. Well, there was an economic downturn. I was married with a young baby, and I said, boy, I don't know if I can feed my family, as streaky as construction was during that time. And I had a friend of mine who said, you'd probably be good at this. You should take a look. I walked on as a recruit, tested, and never looked back. I never wanted to work anywhere else. I've stayed with the sheriff's office the entire time, promoted up through the ranks to assistant sheriff. I became undersheriff in November 2007. Now, that's kind of the operational head. Sheriff's the political head, undersheriff's operational head. And he's our executive officer. Well, I know you're keenly aware what happened shortly after November 2007.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to be the undersheriff that said no. Cut everything. We need to stretch our resources and try as hard as we could not to lay people off, because people are how we deliver our service. Mm-hmm. They are, don't get me wrong, they're expensive. We know that. We don't take that for granted. But they're also our method to deliver service to our community. So we just didn't want to lay anybody off. We didn't have to.
I remember, and I might talk about this if there's time at the end of the show, about the financial crisis and how that changed my life, my business life. But my wife was the HR director for the city of Roseville. Yep. And so she was facing some of the same things that you were doing, is like union employees. And, you know, so you can't always just cut the lowest performer in some of these situations, right? Or your hands are somewhat tied at times in a government agency.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. But I was proud of our team. I mean, they were willing. They recognized that this wasn't a made-up, manufactured crisis. And, you know, they did take cuts. And they did everything that they could to tighten the belt and make things last and, you know, and stretch our resources to the ability that we could. And we got through that, and it's much better now.
How would you compare your leadership style to your predecessor Ed Bonner?
We're similar in nature. We're both very personable, very important for us to know our people and be engaged with our people. One of the things that's very important to me.
He's a Del Oro guy too, isn't he?
He is. He is. Class of 68, I believe, and a Berkeley guy. I can say. going from Loomis to Berkeley, that's a whole different conversation.
That's a culture contrast,
Berkeley in 68, I understand, was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That being said, when I'm putting together my team, what I wanted to make sure is most important, obviously you have to have technical competence, but I want people with organizational courage, people that are willing to challenge convention and, frankly, challenge me. I'm not some, you know, all-seeing, all-knowing, omniscient, omnipotent person. I'm a human being, and I need captains and commanders and civilian staff that are willing to look me in the face and go, I don't know about that, boss. Are you sure?
Yeah.
And have the courage to have that conversation.
I wonder, though, how many people are under your command?
Well, if you talk about my direct line of command, I have one assistant and one undersheriff.
Okay, so
we're a paramilitary organization.
It's sounding like an open door policy to those, but there are so many other people under your command or on staff, if you will. How do they all have access to the man?
I have almost 570 full time employees, and then probably close to another couple hundred volunteers. My door is open. And they all know that. Also, I go to briefings. I mean, you got to get out of your office, and it's not always easy. I have an inbox. I have meetings. I have things that I have to do in the community. This morning, I was at briefing. You just go engage with your staff. Ask them how they're doing. Share how things are going with you. Share perspectives so that they can understand why the decisions are made that you make. They don't always know. And you always have to be willing to say, hey, anybody got any questions? Be willing to answer them.
Yeah, you got your team and you got your customers, it sounds like, is the community with the press briefings. But thinking about something like law enforcement, right? When something bad happens, think back to the situation we talked about at the beginning of the show. You know, something starts in, say, a Sacramento or a neighboring community.
Right.
It could easily escalate and show up in your jurisdiction. you've got to find a way to work cooperatively with the other people around our hometown.
We do.
How do you do that?
Well, I can tell you locally, we're absolutely wonderful in that we have a group where all the law enforcement leaders, we all work together and we all meet monthly. So we have relationships. The time to build a relationship is not during a crisis. You need to have that in place now. Mm-hmm. So we work on building those relationships, and then when something happens, man, I'm a text, a phone call away. We already have those relationships. As far as our partners, yes, I know Sheriff Jones very well. Daniel Hahn, the former chief of Roseville, yep. He's on speed dial. I know lots of people in the region, and you build relationships. Effectiveness is built through those relationships. You can't do it. You can't build that relationship in an emergency.
Well, Placer County is kind of known as a bastion of a great place to live, right? Yeah. I know there's tough areas in every community, but Placer County is kind of known for just being a great place to live.
Right.
How do you contrast, like, when you get in a room with Daniel Hahn or one of these other folks that maybe are facing gangs and things like that on a larger scale, how do you guys figure out a way to work together? Because that's the kind of stuff drifts over into Placer County, too.
It does. The criminals, shockingly, do not know where the county line is. Yeah. And I can tell you, in our county jail system, I have almost 800 inmates, and at any given time, half of them are coming from outside our jurisdiction.
Okay.
We have good stuff to steal. If you want to victimize, you don't necessarily go to a poor community. You go to Roseville. You go to Granite Bay. So the problems don't know where the lines are. It is all about scale. And we speak the same language. And the fact that Daniel has a different community down there that he has to relate to, we speak the same language. And I can understand the issues that he's going through. And he's called me with issues, and I've called him. Same thing with Sheriff Jones.
Yeah. I'm thinking about gun ownership, too. This sort of it kind of makes me think about owning a weapon. My wife's out of town, so my bodyguard is out of town right now. So I'm sleeping with my two best friends, Smith and Wesson. Uh-huh. All of my buddies, I don't have a concealed weapons permit, but a lot of entrepreneurs have these concealed weapons permit. How tough is that to get? And, what's the value? I mean, when do you recommend that being a time to go get that kind of thing?
Okay. In Placer County, pretty easy.
Okay.
The criminal justice landscape has shifted significantly over the years. Some of the decisions in Sacramento, AB 109, prison realignment, Prop 63, Prop 47, these things have shifted, and we have fewer, our jail system can hold, we're holding people, more sophisticated people, for longer periods of time. Unfortunately, what that also means is I don't have as many beds available, and there is a greater criminal element on the street.
Yeah.
Coupled with reduced resources and longer response times. I don't think any sheriff should stand in between a good law-abiding citizen and their ability to protect themselves by carrying a concealed weapon.
Yeah.
So personal protection, in my mind, is sufficient just cause.
Yeah. I'm on my way to go get that concealed weapons permit because, you know what, it does feel like in this day and age, I hate to say it, like sound like an old man, but in this day and age, I guess I am an old man, but you need to be thinking that way, and it's all about freedom. So thinking about, the future of law enforcement and the future of Placer County. If you were to pull out the crystal ball, I mean, what do you imagine in the future?
I think we're going to have to be more effective with resources. We're going to have to leverage those relationships even more effectively. The other thing is, Sacramento does drive policy, and we're going to have to figure out, and we're all struggling with this right now, what is the right size of a jail? I don't know. We're still working on that. I can tell you this. If you have more people out on probation, there has to be a predictable consequence when they screw up.
Okay.
And they do. And that consequence is flash incarceration in jail. But if your jail's full of beds, there's no teeth in probation. If there's no teeth in probation, then what is the point? Things start to break down and the system starts to back up. So we're going to have to look at the jail is the cornerstone of the criminal justice system. We have to right size them and make sure that they are, that we have the right number of beds and the right type of beds to make sure the system works properly.
Well, what ideas are on the horizon? Is there anything being contemplated to face this, or is it, I mean, what can we expect? When will we hit rock bottom and then make the turnaround?
And that's going to be a challenge. One of the things that we're doing locally that we're also struggling with is mental health. We've got a grant, and we're going to do a mental health wing so that we can appropriately house those folks and get them the treatment that they need so that they can return to competency and hopefully productive life. Man, I wish I had all the answers for you. I really don't. I can tell you the things that I see. We are the receptacle for mental health. Homelessness is going to be an issue. It's a challenge that law enforcement has to face every single day. We didn't create the problem, but we're who answers the phone when people call. And we're kind of caught in the middle of having to be compassionate and empathetic and get people the services that they need, but not be too rough about it.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge that we're all facing.
So let's share some closing thoughts about leadership, right? You obviously, as a, you know, I call it the leadership pipeline, right? So you start off, you got to be able to manage yourself, lead yourself, and you're managing others, then you're leading, you know, larger groups, maybe even divisions. And, you know, in something like the Placer County Sheriff's Department, right, you have a large organization that, that you're leading. So thinking about, so you do some coaching. Coaching, right? At some point, you're coaching leaders to lead divisions. Give us some words of wisdom about how to approach leadership for a young entrepreneur. Maybe it's a new manager. How should we be thinking about leadership?
Okay. First off, encourage creativity. I have to recognize as a leader that there are many ways to solve a problem. My job is to establish where the ditches are on the roadway and give them proper motivation to move along that roadway through encouragement, through coaching, through training. Make sure that they're moving, but recognize that there are more than one way. My way may not be the only way.
Ah.
There are other ways to get things done. Never tell person what, don't tell them how to do something. Tell them what you need done and allow them to surprise you with their ingenuity.
Yeah.
As long as they're within operational parameters. We have a tendency to overcoach and over-direct and not allow people the creativity that they need to actually solve problems. And you know what? When they're working and they're solving it on their own, then they're invested in the outcome as well.
Yeah.
They're not implementing your plan. They're implementing their plan. So allow people the creativity and the freedom to solve their own problems.
Lessons of leadership from Devin Bell, Placer County Sheriff. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for bringing the empathy, the courage, the humility to this job that we all respect so much. Don't change the station, because after the break, we will be talking to Allison Joy, the rising rock star in the Sacramento media landscape. I am the Entrepreneur Next Door, and this is The Mark Haney Show.
We are back with your entrepreneurial weekend wake-up call. It's Mark Haney time. And welcome to the first day of the rest of your life. Every one of us has something special inside. And Mark Haney has a knack for helping us see the greatness we have inside. He is the Entrepreneur Next Door. And this is The Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to The Mark Haney Show. I'm Mark Haney. And today I am here with Allison Joy, the editor-in-chief of Comstocks Magazine. How are you doing today, Allison?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's find out about you. Let's find out about Comstocks. Let's start with Comstocks. What is this magazine and media company all about?
Yeah, so Comstocks is the premier regional business publication for the Capital Region. We cover Sacramento County and the nine surrounding counties, and our mission is to connect businesses, entrepreneurs, professionals to the resources they need to succeed and connect those one another.
Aha. So connecting them. What is describe a success story in connection?
So I would say that we have done like themed issues around young professionals or entrepreneurs. And the best part of those issues is when we do like the big photo shoots or the mixers afterwards, and they all get to meet one another.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we find out about them collaborating or their organizations working together later, or some way that they can, like, you know, work together on their business and stuff like that.
I love that. Solitude is the death of an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Nobody does anything great alone. I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we sort of get stuck. Maybe we think we can do it alone, but it never turns out that way. Let's talk about Comstocks. You're not building this thing alone. Let's talk about this team that you have.
No, I have a fantastic team. So we have, you know, Winnie is the owner and founder.
Winnie Comstock. Yeah.
Absolutely, the namesake. So Winnie started the publication. We'll have our 30th anniversary next July. So she started it 30 years ago, and this was after a different kind of local business publication had shut down Executive Place where she was. And so she came to work one day and realized that she no longer had a job because the company had shut down, and she went home. Nice. And she decided to fill the niche herself. So she got up and she registered herself a business. And she, you know, the way she tells it is she signed some stories and went out and sold ads until she had enough to put together a magazine and then sent it out and then did it over again. And
ad saleswoman turn entrepreneur like that. Mm-hmm. And then her business is all around promoting entrepreneurship and business and really our hometown, right? You're thinking about your mission. You know, what do you think inspired her to create the business around our community like this? Because a lot of things could be taken national, but she's had this focus here on our hometown.
Yeah, Winnie, it just has a lot of pride in the region and a lot of love for the region and a lot of respect for the businesses that make it such a great place to live. And, I mean, that's just her life's mission. She's also really passionate about philanthropy. We do an annual philanthropy publication as well and, like, connecting businesses to giving as well. So, yeah, I mean, could we go national? Sure, maybe. Yeah. Who knows? It's a crazy time in media right now. Yeah. But I think that's, you know, that's where her heart is, and that's where my heart is, and that's.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about that. It's print media, right? You have this incredible. I almost think of it as like a piece of art. Your magazine is not like a little throwaway magazine. People, I'm sure, collect them and save them because they're it's a heavy duty piece of paper, a group of papers. So, and the artwork is incredible. Obviously the writing is off the charts as well. But I mean, yeah, is that magazine, the print material, is that what's going on with that business?
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy time right now, and you see a lot of magazines, you know, doing the opposite of what you just described, right? Thinning the paper stock, right? Yeah. Cutting page count.
Going digital.
But you also see magazines coming online, entering the market right now, and they tend to be niche focused, and they tend to be more luxury products. So you'll have thicker paper stock, beautiful artwork. Uh-huh. And you know, that's where we kind of think we fall into. So, you know, the print media world will shift. You saw this, you know, when Kindles and eBooks started happening, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now eBook sales are actually dropping, and, you know, people are doing audiobooks, but they're also reading print books. And so, you know, I think that there will always be a place for it. It's going to change and it's going to get a lot more competitive, but we're ready.
What do you expect for Comstocks? I mean, if you were to get the crystal ball, the same question I asked Devin is like, what do you see in terms of like how Comstocks will adapt and overcome?
Yeah, I see our print product remaining our flagship product. I think that beating a niche publication, the kind of things that we do, it still speaks to our market, but obviously we've, you know, since about, I came on in 2014 and really started the digital push. So, you know, we've redesigned our website. And, you know, we've also kind of worked, we used to really target like the C-suite. And we've tried to get, you know, younger professionals that are upwardly mobile so that we can stay with them through their career. Mm-hmm. There's things that we have to offer them now, but there's things that we offer them in the future as well. And so that's obviously an audience that really wants a digital, strong digital product. Yeah. And so, you know, obviously we keep building out our digital offerings. The website won an award for best web publication back in 2015, I believe that was. And, you know, right now we're sort of looking into video, we're looking into podcasting, things like that. We try and be very thoughtful about how we roll this stuff out. But, I mean, that's what's in my crystal ball, definitely.
Love it. Okay, so thinking about that, Allison, so we want to know your journey. I started off in media back in high school. I was a sports editor of my high school newspaper. I had my own column. It was called Haynes Sports Shorts. But, how did you get into journalism, and how did you get all the way to Comstocks?
Absolutely. So you guys were talking about the Great Recession earlier. I studied Japanese international studies, and I thought I was going to be a great diplomat. I was going to go work for the UN or something like that. And so I was teaching in Japan, and I was there for a couple years. I decided to come home because I was going to go get my master's and maybe try and like get a professorship at the college level. And I left Japan in between Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers. The news from Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
so
like in
it was,
that
pocket. That was in 2008 then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So I came home to kind of
we're on the
world.
Anniversary right now of the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. yeah. Wow.
It was like, yeah, right before I left Goldman Sachs and I got home, it was like a day later, it was Lehman Brothers. So that was a really scary time. But I'd always been really passionate about writing and news. My dad is a news junkie, and he kind of instilled a great respect for the press in me. And one thing that I think the Great Recession did, because I could not go back to school, I could not justify taking on debt or anything like that, is it empowered me to really think about, well, if everything's going to be difficult, well, then I should do the thing that I really, really want to do, right?
And we can all learn from that.
Yeah, well, so my brother had just, he's a geneticist, and he had gotten a gig over at UC Davis. And
you guys come from a smart family, huh? My gosh. Okay, keep the story going. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, not a problem at all. So, I mean, that's, so I packed up my Grand Am, and I drove out here to be with him. I said I didn't want to be in Wisconsin anymore. 6 months later, our sister came, so now we're all out here. And I just started hitting the pavement, trying to get people to let me write for them. I got a gig at the Sacramento Press. So I worked there for a year. That was hyper-local community news online only. That company sold back late the fall of 2013. And so I was kind of on my own freelancing. That was a really scary time. And I'd put a lot of love into that company. It was a small business also. And we were kind of building from the ground up. So, you know, obviously losing that was really hard, but it put me in a great position to come in and help Comstocks, which was really thinking about moving in a digital direction or at least expanding that way. And so I had no background in print media. I'd cut my teeth really in online only, and so it was just a really good pair. So I came on and learned print while I redid their website and sort of, you know.
Did you come on to Comstocks as the editor-in-chief?
No, I came on as the digital editor, and then from there I became the director of digital, and then from there I became the editor-in-chief.
So. Worked your way up the ladder. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does the editor-in-chief do all day long? So it sounds like a big highfalutin position, but I don't even know what it means.
I think that there is a preconceived notion maybe that it is a bit of a highfalutin position, and maybe once upon a time it was the kind of job where you just sat back in your desk and waited for people to come to you, but that's not the way newsrooms work anymore, obviously. So I have a fantastic team. I have two other editors that work with me. So I still manage all of our feature writing, and so then I have a managing editor who does everything on the web and our front back of book, and then we have a sections editor. So I am still in the trenches with my team, you know, for part of the time, right? You know, I do a lot of meetings and kind of conceptualizing what our editorial direction is. I oversee the marketing team, how we're getting our stuff out there. But I also do a lot of, you know, I have an editing schedule just like my other editors, and, you know, I write stuff that they edit. I think that's important for a leader to not lose touch with what your staff is working on and what their kind of day-to-day is like, because you can't really lead if you don't know the kind of obstacles and, you know, assets even that they have at their disposal.
Yeah. Well, so you're an in-the-trenches type of leader. How else would you describe your leadership style? Are you pretty hands-on? Are you a micromanaging type person?
No, I think delegation is huge. I'm definitely a perfectionist, but if you want to be a perfectionist, you have to delegate or you're never going to get anything done, right? And you also need to empower people. You know, I'm a big advocate of, like, letting yourself fail, and those are, like, the most important lessons you learn, right, is when you're, like, on your butt trying to figure out how you're going to get back up.
Tell me about it.
So, you know, so there, you know, our art department operates kind of on their own, and then I vet, right, as things are kind of coming in, getting on the page, you know, I might start being like, let me see another version of this shot, or like, I don't really know about this headline, let's work on things. But I could not get done everything I need to get done if I didn't have like a really strong team who was self-sufficient, who could, you know, make their own decisions on the fly. They know when to come to me when they know, like, Allison's going to want to say on this, like, don't make that call. But other than that, you know, they need to be self-motivated as well.
What about women in leadership? You've recently have written about that subject. Have you had a message out there to women who are either entrepreneurs or working their way toward leadership positions? I mean, how is it, any words of wisdom or inspiration for women out there?
This is your hour, you know? I mean, like, look at what's going on. I mean, I am blessed to, you know, like, work for, like, a woman-run company in a, you know, business journalism isn't necessarily what you would think to find, like, a really strong female staff, which is really what we have. Our art director is a woman, my managing editor is a woman, and our publisher is a woman. Not that we don't have guys on staff, and we love them as well. They do great work. But I think, you know, there's nothing that needs to stand in your way right now. I mean, like, there, with everything we see kind of being brought to light, like, this is, you know, your moment to not get held back by what you're seeing, I guess, yeah, in the media, but use it as fuel forward. And I would say, secondly, like, be kind to other women in that space, because I think sometimes we can get at each other just as much as, like, the world comes at us. And so, you know, lift one another up. And, you know, I didn't expect to be here necessarily, but I never let my gender hold me back, and neither should anybody else.
Allison Joy, Editor-in-Chief, Comstock's Magazine. Thanks for joining us today, Allison. And when we return, I will be joined by Lori and John Wyckoff, a power couple with a passion for growing their business here in our region and helping our veterans, our heroes around the country. I am the Entrepreneur Next Door. This is the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to your entrepreneurial wake-up call. Mark Haney is living proof that nobody goes through life undefeated. His failures have defined his philosophies. His successes have defined his mantras. And through his stories, we are awakened to our own true potential. He is the Entrepreneur Next Door, and this is The Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Haney, and today I have the privilege of being joined by Lori and John Wyckoff, owners of Independence Precision Machining, entrepreneurs, power couple. All right, Lori, let's get to know you two. Lori, talk to us about you and John and this business that you have created together.
Well, we started back in 2008 when the economy was fantastic.
Yeah, well, okay, Lori, let's talk about that. You started a business in 2008. What got into your head on that?
Deciding that we needed to work for ourselves because working for somebody else wasn't really
okay,
paying the bills. So
we may need to have you move that mic slightly closer.
Okay.
Jeff. Okay.
So opening it just made a good sense for us to try to work it out on our own to be successful, because it was getting harder and harder to work for companies and become successful with the way the economy is going. You either would have a job or you wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
So this was going to make sure.
Well, 10-year anniversary, we were just talking about this, 10-year anniversary of the kind of the start of when everybody realized, uh-oh, you know, Lehman Brothers is filing bankruptcy, Goldman Sachs, this is the real deal. So, John, just thinking about that timing, do you, looking back, was that the time to start Precision? Would you have done it differently?
No, I wouldn't have done it differently. We really weren't looking forward to, you know, that issue of the fallout there. We were kind of, you know, in our own little shell, and Lori had said, hey, we need to come up with some retirement plan here. And so we decided that we had to do this on our own. And she always said, when are you going to start a business? And I'd say, oh, it's not a good time. And she said, you always say that. And I said, well, then let's just do it now. It must be a good time.
Yeah, there's never, I guess, the perfect time. You never know. Entrepreneurship as a retirement plan, you know, that's cool. So talk to us about Precision. Talk to us about this retirement plan.
We started off with two pieces of equipment and decided we'll just kind of grow this little business, see how it goes. And each year we've grown 20% at least, and this year more.
Wow.
And we decided, we always had good vision together, and we play off of each other's strengths. And we looked at this as the best option we would have to put a retirement plan in place.
And yeah. That would be to so, Lori, you both quit your job at the same time, so you have an income, and you both decided to jump ship and basically have no income for a while.
Pretty much.
Okay. And okay, let's describe the business. Okay, what have you built? What does this Precision do?
Well, we build a lot of different types of parts, whether it's defense or medical or micro soft parts, and we never really know what we're going to get. Sometimes we do, but we just build what they bring. It's more of a job shop.
Kind of a contract manufacturer. Is that a good way to say it?
Right.
So, okay, so give us an idea of something really cool you built.
Well,
can you share that stuff, or is it all is it confidential?
No. One of the areas we really wanted to focus was aerospace. And It required us to get several certifications, ISO 9000 certification, and we recently achieved an aerospace certification. And we've been able to take over some jobs for a large defense company and turn a problem part that they had, a lot of rejects, and we turned it around. We've delivered over 10,000 parts with zero rejects.
Wow.
And really turned the project around for that company.
So thinking about that, you know, you don't do that all by yourself. What kind of team have you built?
You know, it's been a long road with building a good team, but we've got a mixture of some older guys with, you know, 15 to 20, 25 years experience, and then we're really trying hard to work with the younger millennials.
Is it harder?
It's very hard.
It's very stressful.
Yeah. There's a gap of a work ethic there, okay, that we're finding. Some really have a good work ethic and others don't. We try to find the people that we think are going to show up every day, and we're really trying to build a work ethic into some of these
people.
Lori,
how many teammates do you have? How many employees?
There's 13.
13 employees, and your son Travis is a piece of the team. He's yes, a key integral component to the team.
Oh, absolutely.
What's Travis do?
He's the director of marketing and sales, and he obviously is the techie person that can, you know, kind of do some things online and help us out where we're not really strong along those lines.
Does he help with that millennial challenge that you sound like he might have?
He absolutely does. And that kind of...
Because he's a sales guy, so obviously he's good with people.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll do the pre-screening before they come into us, and he does a really great job at
okay,
that.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, that's cool. So, okay, but let's talk about leadership. You know, right there's... as business owners, leadership is a component. I'm wondering, who is the leader of this show? Who's in charge? Lori, you or John? How do you guys work that out?
It depends on what the subject is. I kind of handle the money in, and he's kind of going, I got to spend it, and I'm kind of going, no.
Sounds like you're in charge. So. Okay, John, how would you describe Lori's leadership style?
She's very direct, okay, and she's the rabbit, and I'm the tortoise.
Okay.
And, you know, she's all gung-ho, and I'm usually the one that's trying to slow the train down a little bit and keep things into perspective, which is part of that balance.
Lori, how would you describe John? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but he's very steady, and so I lean on him for the strength because he's pretty calm.
Yeah.
You know, so if I'm going to go from 0 to 100, you know, he might let me go, but, you know, he can pull me back to go, okay, you know, let's just get a perspective.
Yeah, we were able to talk each other off the cliff quite often.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I can imagine having that business partner by your side, so important. I've got some of those business partners too, but I also have my children near and dear to my heart, but they're also, you know, I'm business partners with my daughter on a real estate company. My son Marcus and I, we do the radio show together. You talked like it was all good with Travis. I mean, there must be some drama, Lori.
No, there really isn't. I mean, he's graduated. We're using his degree to our advantage as
all
a business
right.
degree, and so there really isn't. And there's been a little bit of balance to figure out, okay, he's going to work for us. He's our son, but he also is somebody that we should respect what his position is and talk to him like a professional, an employee, not that he's our son. Sometimes it's a little difficult, but for the most part, we're able to pull that together.
To remind yourself, wait, he's grown up now.
Yeah,
he's a man.
He works for us, and we should listen to what he has to say. And that's been growing. Not a growing pain, but it's been really a good experience for us to go, okay, I kind of see him in his role, and we go, okay, I believe you.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting to think about the challenges that might be there for a family business, but also the strength, right? There's a lot of advantages as well, as there may be somebody might see certain parts of it as a disadvantage or more of a struggle. But I'm imagining, what does the dinner table look like when you guys all get together? Are you talking business, or are you talking about you know, other stuff outside of work? Can you separate it?
Yeah, we try really hard to punch out at the end of the day and go home. We usually leave the time where we to talk about the business about 3 a.m. when we wake up in a cold sweat, deciding, you know, what do we have to do the next day?
Oh gosh,
and that'll happen.
What keeps you up at night?
People.
Yeah.
People. Finding the right people to put on the bus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What keeps you up at night? Anything keep you up at night, Lori?
I would say the financing, you know, it's ever, a friend of ours supported us, said this was a great thing that we're doing, but he said, you know, I hope you have the stomach for it.
Yeah.
And it's true. It really is true. Worth every bit of it, but you have to be willing to go, if I lose everything, I'm okay with living in an apartment.
Yeah. Well, something must be going right, right? You're wearing shirts today. You guys are so generous with the community, and you're wearing shirts today that have an American flag on them. You do so much for our veterans. Can we talk about that for a minute? What's the flag all about? What's the patriotism? Where does that come from? What are you doing?
I think I've always been patriotic. I've had family, just more relatives in the military, and John's background with his dad. He was a Air Force brat, and they do a lot to sacrifice, and, you know, different countries as well as here, and, you know, we really truly do live in the greatest country, and what's not to like, right? And it offers everything, and we try to give back monthly as well as care packages that we've gone out and sent out with groups, and it's just important. It's because
you're sending care packages to those that are fighting overseas.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and to be here doing what we're doing right now is the very reason, mm-hmm. you know, that we are all fortunate.
What's this charitable cause that you're so focused on, John?
Well, you know, like Lori said, we believe real strongly in the military and law enforcement in general, and the Defenders of Freedom is a group that was founded to send care packages to soldiers overseas, and we became involved with that, and would go and you know, rally with a, you know, 50 or 100 other people and put together care packages and mail them off, and it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, having a son that has received some of those care packages, one that indirectly saved his life, but I know of others that for other people over there that actually they get depressed, they get sad when they get a care package from home. It can actually be a lifesaver in terms of we sent one to somebody at one point, and that was the day they were thinking about taking their own life, and then they received that package, and it came back to us that that's what gave them the hope and the reminder of home. So I know that you're doing that. Closing thoughts about leadership, as we, you know, I like to be the guy that focuses on the future while learning lessons from or focusing on today, thinking with a dream of the future, but also with a little bit of a tiny bit of reflection on the past and maybe lessons that you might learn. Maybe just as we go to break, think about lessons that you have learned that you might want to pass along to that next person in line. Lori, you want to start us off?
Well, don't be afraid to fail. And somebody has to do it. Somebody has to step up. And one of our goals was to see if we can employ other people and to make quality of life. And it may not get really big, but to know that we've done our part. Yeah. And it's kind of that we help this person and maybe they'll help the next person. It's just something everybody needs to do.
Yeah, John, you want to take it away?
Well, I think our the initial expectations that we set were real important. We're about the size that we decided that we would like our business to be in our business plan that we set in 2008. I think the lesson that we learned was you'll probably make half as much money as you think you're going to make, and it's going to cost you twice as much to get there.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah. Lori, John, thank you for coming on the show. Stick around. Marcus and I will share our takeaways, closing thoughts, and I have my own little 2008 story lesson that I will share if there is time. So stick around. This is the Mark Haney Show. So we hope, here we go.
We're back with Mark Haney, the man whose mission statement is tattooed to his soul. With future generations in mind, he will create opportunity for his family, for his friends, and for his community. He is the entrepreneur next door, and this is the Mark Haney Show.
Wow, great show today. Nobody knows everything about entrepreneurship. Nobody knows everything about life, right? It's this massive puzzle, and I think each of us sort of sees things from our own angle. Today we talked, Marcus, about leadership, about perspective, and you know, I think we learned a little bit about leadership, and that listening to our teammates has so much value. Thoughts?
What a great show. Absolutely loved hearing from the sheriff. That was such a touching story, hearing from, you know, his experience and his leadership capabilities and his methodology behind that. But yeah, it all is all about your team at the end of the day, right? So if you're not getting anybody to follow you as a leader, are you leading?
Yeah. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. We talked about that. We heard about lead by example. There's so many cliches about leadership. But, I mean, today we also talked about what I call the two pillars of building a leadership culture, something that is sustained over time. And I really think it starts with humility, right? Your HQ, your humility quotient, right? Hmm. If a leader has a very high humility quotient, and that leader has a very strong level of courage and the willingness to step up and face fear, you know, what a perfect combination for building a sustainable culture. And I think we heard that from Devin Bell, the sheriff, today. It started with Ed Bonner, right? Building that culture. He took it on and adopted that. And now places like the Placer County Sheriff's Department, I mean, there is just such a culture of working together and listening and teamwork.
In the Marine Corps, we call that leading from the front, okay, right? So you're the guy out front leading the charge. You're the guy saying fix bayonets. You're leading by example, doing the right thing, and everything seems to fall into place if you're the guy stepping up.
You know, thinking about business, we talk about, you know, one of my Markisms, one of my cliche, it's not a cliche, one of my mantras is there's no problem more sales won't fix. But
we
talked about crisis, right? Sometimes a crisis in business means, you know, we're not making the sales that we need to in order to survive. And so sometimes I like to say, if you ask the question, who's the sales manager? And when you look around your company and there is no sales manager, guess what? It's you. And if there is a sales problem as the entrepreneur, we do have to step up. If it's not happening, we have to look around and lead from the front. And it makes me think, Marcus, you know, we're also hitting some anniversaries, right? It's the 10-year anniversary of Lehman Brothers filing for bankruptcy and the housing crisis and all that. But it's the 18-year anniversary of 9/11, something that prompted, that changed your life and probably indirectly prompting you to join the Marine Corps.
No doubt.
And you know what? And Devin Bell, looking back a couple years ago, he had some crises as well. So what do you do in a time of crisis? I'll share with you today what I'll call my good to great story. And there's a book called Good to Great from Jim Collins. Everybody's heard of this thing.
Great book.
It's a great book and a lot of lessons. And I remember in 2006, you know, before the crisis, right? There was we were all going through and learning from the Good to Great book, stuff like the flywheel concept. We really were focusing on getting our systems together in my group of security camera companies so that they all fed off of one another and worked as this digital machine. And it was going great. And we'd gotten ourselves up over a couple hundred million. Life was pretty good. And, you know, the machine was being built. You know, thanks a little bit to the team, a little bit to the book and the concepts in the book. But then I remember 2008. Right, it was Christmas time around 2008, and it wasn't the same kind of Christmas. Right, Christmas in 2008 was like stressful. What are we gonna do? You know, 3 or 4 months earlier, in September. You know, all the bankruptcies that I discussed happened. You know, all this, the Great Recession began. Fortunately for us, we had already streamlined in 2007 and cut a lot of the extra baggage associated with like this systematization that I talked about. But as we went into January, we knew that this was for real, right? Our business had dropped off dramatically for 3 or 4 months, and it's like, well, at some point, you've got to make some serious changes. So, you know, what we did was we thought back to the Good to Great book, and we called our team in there, and we reflected on some of the comments that were made today, and we started listening to our teammates. And we all decided we needed to make some cuts, starting with ourselves. We all took across the board 20% pay cuts. We had a leadership group called The Family, and we all took 20% across the board pay cuts. We cut pay where we could, 5 to 10% throughout the company, changed up the benefits plans, and really resized the organization. We let a good number of people go.
To survive.
Because, you know, well, you got people in the Good to Great book, like Circuit City is no longer
gone.
It's not even on the planet anymore, but it's one of the books referenced in the book Good to Great, ironically.
Crazy.
I remembered back to the James Stockdale story in the book Good to Great, where James Stockdale, he was the longest living resident in the Hanoi Hilton, right? He was a POW, prisoner of war, back in Vietnam, and you know what? He survived it by deciding to face the brutal facts as we know them, while in the end having that unwavering belief that in the end everything was going to be okay. So we made all the cuts, kind of demoralizing in a way, but then we started going on the offensive, right? There's no problem more sales won't fix. Sales management meetings every night, weekly meetings with the entire company, right? All hands meetings weekly, updating everyone on where the progress was. But I think one of the interesting things that we did, and I think it was a key to the success, is we created a Good to Great bonus, right? So as much as the pay had gotten cut, the benefits had gotten dropped and redone, you know what? We gave everybody a chance to earn it back. So daily, on the time clock, in the daily reports, it was, how are we doing against quota, right? If we got back to where we were, then there would be a bonus. And every incremental step back meant some kind of bonus back to the original pay. And if we went back to where we were or above, it would actually be a real bonus, right?
Right.
Significant bonus. And that Good to Great bonus, and we tried to make it positive, as sad and as uncertain as times were. I think the combination of the communication, the listening, the leadership of our team, the Good to Great bonus, it ended up being really the difference maker. We started having our most profitable year ever in the coming years, and ultimately led to this billion-dollar dream that we were chasing. We ended up merging with another company, becoming the most significant distributor in the country. Great opportunity for my family, our friends, and I think this community. So great things when a team comes together. That company now is the largest security distributor in the world, multiple billions. And here I am in Sacramento helping ignite the entrepreneurial revolution with you, chasing my new entrepreneurial dream. Just a special shout out to all those who are, you know, fighting for our security, our way of life, whether it be in the military, whether it be in law enforcement. We look back, it's a time for gratitude. And thanks to all those that have fought for our freedom, to the 13 stripes, to the 50 stars, and to the leaders in our life that are always worth fighting for, ours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.